Welcome to the Full Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 9:21 Greenwich Mean Time. Today is November 13th. Well, today being Friday, it's the big picture, long-term audio for the various different asset classes. First, let's have a review of what's been happening this week, and it really has been really quite eventful. Starting off with stock markets, the better performing markets in Asia have become really quite overextended relative to their 200-day moving averages. And the Philippines in particular has pulled back sharply this week. The Philippines was also one of the most overextended relative to the 200-day moving average. So that probably does indicate that we are into a reversionary process. And I think probably the question now is whether that's going to be a sharp reversal or whether we're going to get a range in consolidation and allow the moving average to catch up. But it does look like one way or the other, we're going to move into that kind of reversionary process for some of these high-flying markets. Now, elsewhere in the ASEAN region, you had Indonesia, which pulled back a bit sharply today, but has held on to the vast majority of its gains. The Indian market, which was testing its 2008 highs, was also a bit weaker in here today, but has been pausing for much of the month. And it looks that it has moved into one of these ranging consolidations. And what we've often seen is that something that ranges and allows the moving average to catch up often completes it in a short period of time. In other words, it gets the downside break, then finds support and begins to rally once more. And there's a chance that that is what we're going to see in India. But India certainly isn't the most overextended of these markets. Elsewhere in Asia, the Chinese market, which has rallied really very impressively over the last 6 weeks, 10 weeks, pulled back sharply in here today, and that's on the on inflationary fears and the expectation that the Chinese will do whatever they can to bring down inflationary pressures, which have pushed above 3%, I think upwards of 4%. And with that being the case, it would suggest that they are going to introduce more tightening measures. Higher interest rates are going to be a part of that. But the Chinese are going to use the whole gamut of tools. That's what they've done in the past. There's no reason to expect that they're going to do anything different in the future. So we can expect reserve requirement hikes. We can expect them to tamper both with the lending rate and the deposit rate, as well as introducing legislation. They could also open up their stockpiles of raw commodities, and that is an increasing likelihood given the extent to which so many of these commodities have already ran. Elsewhere in the commodity markets, Europe and the USA haven't been nearly as overextended, and by extension, they haven't pulled back by nearly as much. The Nasdaq, which is probably the most overextended of the big stock markets, pulled back a bit sharply in here today. It was down just under 1.5%, and it was testing its 2007 highs. So it's at an area of potential resistance, and it wouldn't be all that surprising to see some consolidation of recent gains. And that's a theme that's running through right across asset classes, because if we look at the commodity markets, this was a big week for the precious metals in particular. Both silver and platinum had extraordinary volatility, with silver hitting $29 and then some at one point this week, but it's closing out the week at $26, so down $3 off its high. And it's still really quite overextended. When it was at $29, the moving averages were close to $20. So that's really quite an extraordinary overextension. And it's a pretty similar story for palladium, which was well in excess of $700 earlier this week, but is finishing out the week at $677. And palladium was over $200 overextended relative to the 200-day moving average. So the risks are now skewed to the downside rather than the upside, because given the fact that they've already run so remarkably and given that they have pulled back in a dynamic fashion into the end of this week, it would suggest that people are beginning to take some money off the table. Gold, having been really quite steady, pulled back by $40 today and is pulling away from this $1,400 level. That's a failed upside break out of the little range, and now it's testing an MDL within the previous range. Gold isn't nearly as overextended as silver or platinum, and it could quite easily consolidate above or in the region of the 200-day moving average and push on to new high ground over the medium term. But in the short term, these precious metals do look like they are susceptible to a further pullback and consolidation. And it's not just in precious metals. Copper this week tested the $4 area and closed above it for the first time in a number of years, but only briefly, and finished out the week in the region of $3.89. Now, copper is another one that had sort of raced to get to that new high level. But again, it's another one of these charts that looks like a pause in consolidation in the region of a prior high wouldn't be particularly surprising. And what we've seen in here this week is characteristic of a near-term top. We would need to see these commodities pulling back below 200-day moving averages to confirm a medium-term top. And what I think is really more likely is that we're going to see a pause in consolidation and let the moving average catch up to some of these more overextended commodities before they push on to new high ground. This was also a week full of action in the agricultural sector. Both corn and soybeans are closing limit down in here today. And this was a very big week for sugar, where it pulled back by 3.5 cents in here today and a similar margin yesterday. And that is a massive key reversal on the week. So the question really for sugar is whether we get any right-hand extension following such a huge top, or whether it comes rattling back down. What we saw the last time we saw sugar rallying in such an impressive fashion was that it didn't pause to touch the sides on the way down. It came down so quickly, and it has fallen with a similar momentum in here over the last couple of days. So sugar certainly looks like it has hit a medium-term top in here. And if you look right across the soft commodities sector, coffee has pulled back reasonably sharply over the last couple of days. But again, it's above its 200-day moving average. It wasn't nearly as overextended as sugar. And probably the best performer of the lot until this week was cotton. And it hasn't been limit down, but it has certainly fallen back sharply in the last 3 days. This is the biggest reaction that it's had in the last 4 months. So it's a bigger reaction from a much higher level at an extraordinarily overextended level relative to the 200-day moving average. And it really does look like it's probably hit a high of at least near-term significance, but really probably medium-term significance as well. When you take a step back and you look at all these commodity prices that have hit important peaks, oil is really quite important because oil has been ranging for the better part of 14 months. And that range has been mostly between $70 and $80. But of course, the exception is that oil has been ranging and it's produced a number of failed upside and downside breaks. So it's broken above 80 but not been able to hold it, and it's broken below 70 but not be able to hold that either. And it was weaker by almost $3 in here today, having hit a new high for the last 14 months and counting yesterday. So it's closing out the day in the region of $85. And provided it holds above the $80 level, then we can probably continue to give the upside the benefit of the doubt. In the meantime, it really does need an upward dynamic to confirm that these higher levels can be supported by what really is quite a long range underneath. With agricultural commodities coming under selling pressure, that is going to that well, that's a positive for a lot of the emerging markets because their inflationary measures have a proportionally large weighting of agricultural commodities in them. So inflationary pressures in China and India have certainly risen over the last 6 months, particularly because they haven't had the best of harvests. Even with a positive monsoon in India, the price of food continues to rise. And in China, well, Mrs. Tracy tells me that her family have been complaining that some food prices have quadrupled. So that's really quite material I inflation in commodity prices. And with these prices now looking like they have hit at least a near-term top, and the Well, certainly the corn, soybeans, wheat have probably got some room to consolidate and still hold above their bases. It does suggest that we're going to see a further pause in consolidation for some of these food commodities. This was an important week because, on the one hand, we had the G20 meeting where the European finance ministers came out and in a move of solidarity with the periphery and said that any haircuts or burden sharing between sovereigns and creditors would take place on any debt that was issued after 2013, in other words, following the bulk of the austerity measures and deficit spending that's going to ensue over the next few years. That did help to bring down the sovereign spreads in here today, particularly that Irish bond, where it fell by at least 60 basis points. But it hasn't had a material effect on the euro. The euro was a little bit stronger in here today by 27 ticks against the US dollar, but it hasn't pushed back up into the overhead range. Now, the euro had a failed upside break late last week, and a rule of thumb from the chart seminar is if you get a clear failed upside break, then there's a strong likelihood it's going to come back and test the lower side of the range. Well, it did that and actually broke to the downside. So even with this statement from the European finance ministers, we haven't had the euro rally back in an emphatic fashion, and that's probably because with the inflationary pressures that are coming out of China and the fact that so many of these markets have become overextended, and the level of anxiety has risen quite considerably, and the quantitative easing that was announced last week continues to be digested, that people are starting to take some money off the table. And risk assets have had such a remarkable move over the last 10 weeks that we're seeing a little bit of money starting to be taken off the table. And that is affecting the euro to a certain extent. The yen, which has been remarkably firm over the last 10 weeks, appears to have encountered resistance, and the dollar is rallying against the yen in here right now. The low for the dollar against the yen today was 81.66, but it actually finished in negative, or in positive territory against the yen, and it looks like it's found at least short-term support and potentially medium-term support. And there has been a bit of an inverse correlation here between the dollar-yen rate and between risk assets. So if we have seen a medium-term or at least a pause in consolidation for risk assets, then that should be positive for the Japanese manufacturers. Japan has been such a remarkable underperformer over the last few months that if everything else turns around, then Japan should benefit from the weaker yen. And the stock market has rallied really quite impressively over the last couple of weeks. Now, it was a bit weaker in here today, down by about 1.4%. But it's held the vast majority of its recent advance, and we haven't had anything in the way of clear downward dynamics, which were present in a number of markets. So Japan is probably one to watch if we are seeing some money coming off the table, because it will need to find a haven somewhere. And that's probably not going to be in government bonds. US Treasuries were weaker by a full point in here today, and that is quite a large reversal, because the high of the day was closer to 130, and it's finishing out the day around 127.23. So not only down on the day, but actually quite a large range. And US Treasuries have broken down from this medium-term top formation. Now, back in September, when we were talking about US Treasuries topping out, we met quite a lot of resistance from subscribers who were long, because obviously they were making money at the time. But US Treasuries, Treasury yields, are close to historic lows. And those yields have been falling for the better part of 30 years and counting. And just like at the top of just about every other bull market, supply explodes. And if this were a commodity and you were to see huge new supply hitting the market, then that would be an indication that you were hitting a major top formation. And if this were a stock market and there were a slew of new IPOs coming in as markets have been rallying for a prolonged period of time, then you'd characterize that as being close to a major top, because supply expanding at such an enormous rate quickly saps up all of the demand that exists. And to a certain extent, that's what we're seeing with bonds, because US Treasury supply, and indeed sovereign bond supply, has exploded over the last couple of years. When you've got countries like Mexico lending for 100 years and being oversubscribed, you know that there is a bit of a mania going on for the kind of paper that these countries are issuing. And of course, it's not just countries, but a large number of corporations have issued significant amounts of debt in an effort to capture the remarkably low yields and bully for them. But what it all points towards is, regardless of the motivation of investors, that US Treasuries have, in terms of price, topped out. The high that we saw, which was closer to 137, what hasn't been retested. We now have a lower high and we have a lower low, and we're at an historically high level. So it has all the characteristics of a medium-term top. It could quite easily be the top in capital letters. And now, we thought that the Treasury yields had bottomed back in 2002 and 2003, and the credit crisis quickly disabused us of that hypothesis. But that doesn't mean that this isn't the bottom this time around. The credit crisis is unlikely to be repeated, and at least in the in the short to medium term. And rather than yields being pushed higher because of inflationary pressures in places like the USA and in much of Europe or Japan, they're being pushed gradually higher by creditors being unwilling to lend at such risible yields in to governments that haven't got very good or really convincing measures for how they're going to pay back in a currency that is worth anything. And that is what's been supporting the gold price over the last 10 weeks and counting, with gold pushing back up towards the sorry, pushing back up to the $1,400 level over the last couple of weeks. The level of interest in precious metals has increased really quite considerably. Now it's pulled back sharply in the last couple of days and finished out the week in the region of $1,370. But this type of activity hasn't derailed the secular bull market for gold. We've probably hit a near-term peak, and gold's not particularly overextended. So, if it pulls back into the low 1300s, then it'll probably be coming relatively close to its 200-day moving average, and depending on circumstances, the next reasonably good buying opportunity. Gold had this remarkable rhythm over the last decade, where it rallied impressively, moved into relatively lengthy consolidations of approximately 18 months, broke upwards in Septembers of uneven years. So it broke upwards in 2005, 7, and 9, and now it broke upwards in 2010, also in September. And that's a marked acceleration. Acceleration is probably an exaggeration. It's a picking up in the pace of gold's advance. And it would also suggest that we're moving into the third psychological perception stage, and that could yet end in gold fever. But what it would also suggest is, if the pace of gold's advance is picked up, then we would not expect it to move into another 18-month consolidation. And that would mean that the rhythm that investors have become used to over the last decade has become so well known that it is unlikely to be repeated. It's a little bit like Heidegger's uncertainty principle. And that being the case, with gold pulling back now and probably reverting towards the mean, that The next reasonable buying opportunity is likely to present itself, probably sooner than within the next 18 months. And the next time it sustains a move to new high ground, and I think it will do that, I do not think that this is the top in big letters for gold, but it probably will happen, probably within the next year, rather than the next 18 months. So that is certainly something to bear in mind. When we look around the world, we have this massive difference between the progressing markets of Asia and Latin America and the regressing markets of the USA, Europe, and Japan. Gold advancing in just about every currency is in response to the declining faith in fiat currencies, and those fiat currencies are primarily those of Europe, Japan, and the USA. When you look into Asia or Latin America, the pattern has been towards appreciation of those currencies. And the reason for that is not because people are particularly concerned with gold, although gold is appreciating in just about every currency. The reason that one would be looking at those other areas is because of the greatest urbanization in history. So if we look at the world as two halves, the bull market in gold is reflective of the regression that's occurring in one half of the world. But the appreciation of currencies in Latin America and the population centers of Asia is more optimistic. It's driven by the greatest urbanization in history, where we have hundreds of millions of new consumers entering the global economy, moving from the countryside into the cities, where large population countries have got massive young populations, and where GDP growth is improving faster than population growth is rising. And that is creating more people in the middle class. Governance has improved remarkably, and the trajectory of governance in Asia and Latin America is really very positive over the medium to longer term. And that's helping to encourage investors to move bigger percentages of their capital into these regions. And that's helping to fuel a bull market right across Asia and Latin America. Now, a number of those Asian markets have pulled back sharply. And the same can be said for Latin America. Colombia in particular has pulled back really very sharply over the last few days. And both Peru and Chile are really quite overextended relative to their 200-day moving averages. So again, the risk are they're susceptible to a pause in consolidation of what have been very powerful gains over the short term. But any reversions to the 200-day moving average for some of these markets are likely to be reasonably good buying opportunities with a medium to longer term time horizon, because the bull market that is developing in the population centers of the world isn't something that is about to go away. There is absolutely nothing is going to stop the hundreds of millions of young people from growing up, seeking an education, a job, and a better standard of living. And that's a secular trend. And it's an optimistic trend because their productivity and their consumption will help to support the global economy for decades to come. And the companies that are going to do best are either the consumer companies that are supplying these new consumers with the goods that they want and need, or they're going to be the plays on the infrastructure development that is required to build the cities that these people are going to live in. Now, China has a big head start on the rest of the world in urbanization, but India is only getting started. And the population centers in Asia and indeed the Middle East have a lot of work to do. So the infrastructure development theme isn't something that's going to go away, although of course it will ebb and flow with the occasional medium-term correction and occasional recession. But recessions should be viewed as excellent buying opportunities for long-term secular themes. And we've just come out of a big recession, and the global economy is on a growth trajectory once more. Monetary conditions remain really quite accommodative. Now they're not nearly as accommodative as they were this time last year, and a number of countries are beginning to raise interest rates. Australia, in particular, is up to 4.75%, but 4.75% is what would have been considered the lower barrier over the last 20 or 30 years. So while the path for interest rates is looking decidedly towards higher interest rates over the medium term, particularly in Asia and Latin America, they're still at really quite accommodative levels. So that will help to fuel a bull market for a considerable period. And the fact that you have the USA and potentially Japan or the UK adding more money into the system through quantitative easing will help to fuel investment in better performing or higher yielding assets. With what we could term aristocrats in our dividend aristocrats, some of the biggest companies in the USA and in Europe are heavily leveraged to growth in the global economy, and a large number of them have paid sound, reliable dividends for a considerable period of time. And I've done a number of reviews of those types of stocks over the last few months, and you'll find them in the chart, sorry, in the search, either by searching for aristocrats or high yielders. And those types of blue chip companies have got a very solid future in front of them. They have a dominant position in their particular niche, and they have the scope that they will be able to sell into these burgeoning developing economies, and they're probably going to be the best plays for some of the regressing markets. The domestic growth story for the USA and a good part of Europe is likely to be pretty moribund for a considerable period of time. That's not going to stop their stock markets from performing because you have a massive liquidity and you have a large number of internationally based companies domiciled in the USA and in Europe. The FTSE alone has, I think, 70% of its earnings derived from outside of the UK. So that's not going to stop the slowdown in the domestic economy, or the slow recovery of the UK economy isn't going to stop the FTSE from heading higher, provided the global economy is still on a growth trajectory. And as I said, there's nothing at the moment to question that. Now, what we've had in the short term, and particularly over the last 10 to 12 weeks, has been a remarkable move in risk assets generally. And it looks to be on its last legs. We've already seen some pretty violent reactions in some of the better performers. It would suggest that the markets that are most overextended relative to their 200-day moving averages are probably in a reversionary process. And that would suggest that those that have lagged, such as some markets in Northern Europe or the Dow and the S&P, will outperform in the next few months. But any significant reversion to the mean in fuller money themes such as the population centers of Asia, commodity producing Latin America, technology shares or high yielders, or more correctly, reliable yielders, are likely to be buying opportunities on those reversions to the mean. And I suspect that we're going to be shorting treasuries for a considerable period of time with the kind of action that we've seen in here. And I think with that, I will leave you for the evening, and wish all the best to all of you.